It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our look at energy continues with Canadian researcher Nick Nanos, chairman of Nanos Research Group. He recently spoke with WESA assignment editor Mark Newtbar.
Nick, thanks for joining us.
It's great to join you.
We're talking about energy today. How are people feeling? How are they thinking about this idea of relying more on domestic energy?
Well, you know what? I think it would be fair to say that this is the one piece of good news out there in terms of the economy because it's exciting. We've lived in the past thinking about reliance on oil from the Middle East and from outside of the U.S. Now with shale gas and also what I'll say new discoveries of oil in North America and Canada and the U.S., there's a new narrative. And the new narrative is, you know what? We can be more energy independent than we have been in the past. And the kicker is, there could be more reasonable prices in terms of energy, oil, and natural gas.
Is it security? Is it prices? What's driving this new interest?
We did a poll with the Wilson Center for Scholars in Washington, and we asked Americans what was more important, energy security and not bringing oil in from outside of North America, or reducing greenhouse gases, because we can't forget the environment, because Americans are still very concerned about the environment. And you know what? By a margin of 2-1, 63% of Americans thought that energy security, making sure that America was not reliant on oil from outside of North America, was actually more important than greenhouse gases. So we have to remember, you know what? People are practical. They're consumers. They think about, what does this mean to me? And what I'll say, this good news energy narrative seems to have gotten through in terms of people thinking that it's going to make, what I'll say, for better day-to-day lives in terms of managing costs.
When we look at energy here in southwestern Pennsylvania, of course, we're talking about fracking and natural gas. I think people are very conflicted. They see these jobs. They see this possible economic boom, yet they're also looking at some of the environmental data that's out there. Do you see that same conflict elsewhere?
Yes, actually. You know what? The environmental, what I'll say, energy conflict is there. And you know what? People want to have their cake and eat it. They want a stable supply of energy, but they want these different energy sources to kind of come to the market within a particular environmental, what I'll say, standard, right? So it's just one of those things where we have to be, I think for anyone that's in the energy space, they have to be very responsible, because people don't want to just know that there will be a stable supply of energy and that it'll be affordable. They want to know what impact this has on the environment. But that being said, we can't forget that economic renewal and the economy and jobs is a key issue for Americans, right? And as a result, right now, it looks like the economy and the potential economic impact of the energy is trumping the environment.
You talk about bringing energy to the market. Your idea of the market might be a little bit different than mine. Tell me your philosophy there.
Well, the thing is, it's one of those things where it's a bit like the Wizard of Oz, I think, when we think of consumers, right? That's all they think about is, what does this mean to me? So whatever is behind the curtain, and when I say what's behind the curtain could include renewable energy, shale gas, oil, coal, hydroelectric energy. That's all they care about is what it means to them in terms of a stable supply and price. But, you know, I think when I talk about the market, I talk about at least not picking winners and losers, that I think the government has a significant role to play in making sure that whatever energy sources that we use, that they meet a particular environmental standard. However, once that standard is set, the polling suggests that people are open to different types of energy sources competing technologically in order to kind of meet the needs of Americans. So we have to think of the market, at least, as a place where we can guarantee a certain environmental standard to protect our environment, but then not to try to stay away from picking winners and losers, because who knows what kind of breakthrough technology could be developed in the future, and it's important to have that type of flexibility.
So at what level does that policy have to be set?
Oh, well, this is the tough part, right? Because, you know, in the ideal world, there would be national leadership. But, you know, when we look at the current political environment in the United States, in Congress and with the president, it's just very difficult to kind of effectively enforce or advance that leadership because of Congress. You know, but what's realistically happening is the states are now taking leadership. We look at states such as California, which has been at the forefront of advancing particular environmental kind of standards related to auto emissions. And what we see is it's kind of like open, you know, we have open text software. It's kind of like open source policy development, right? One state comes out with a policy on the environment, and then other states go, hey, you know what? That standard kind of works. And I think that's where, you know, states that are at the forefront in the frontier, the energy frontier, like Pennsylvania, actually not only have a responsibility, but they have a significant duty to remain on the forefront to kind of drive what I'll say, development that balances what I'll say, economic opportunity with environmental stewardship.
Where would politicians be getting the understanding of what those policies should be? Should they be turning to researchers such as yourself? Should they be talking to the people? You know, how do they base that understanding on a new technology that they might not fully understand themselves?
Well, I think that's the kicker right now because you know, realistically, politicians have to turn to two things. They have to turn to scientists because whatever policy that we do have has to be science-based, right? Not emotional, not irrational, but it has to be based on the science of what's being done. And they also have to listen to Americans. You know, the thing is if the politicians listen to Americans, you know what they would start to do? They'd set standards to create an even environmental standards to create an even playing field so that Americans would know that when they turn the lights on at home, that energy meets a particular environmental standard. And you know what? It doesn't really make any difference how that energy is developed as long as it meets that energy standard and that it's appropriate for the market. So I think politicians have to focus on the science, but they also have to realize that voters are also consumers, right? And they think about what it means to them. And they think about, you know, making sure that we can protect our environment while at the same time having reasonably priced energy.
We're speaking with Nanos Research Group Chairman Nick Nanos. We in Pittsburgh like to think that we are a player in this. Is Pittsburgh as important as we like to think we are?
Well, I'll tell you just from an outside perspective, because I'm in the United States and Canada, we have to think of Pittsburgh as part of an energy triangle. The energy triangle being Houston, Calgary in Canada, and Pittsburgh being on the frontier. And, you know, I think, you know, it's interesting. We do polling, and about 3 out of every 4 Americans think that there should be a continental energy strategy. So Pittsburgh has to think of itself within a continental, not a state energy strategy, but a continental strategy between Canada and the United States, and one that is global in view. And, you know, the reality is that those new discoveries in Pennsylvania, the shale gas, make it a player. It's never going to move. It will always be there. But it's up to Pittsburgh to kind of develop a strategy to see how it fits in the global supply chain and how it can be a player, basically punch above its weight with Houston and Calgary. And, you know, I think it would be, you know, things like there should be more direct flights between Houston, Pittsburgh, and Calgary, right, to promote that cross-pollination, because that's just going to mean that Pittsburgh will be continue to be at the forefront, and that it'll be part of what I'll say a larger strategy that benefits not just Pennsylvania, but the continental economy.
If there is such a triangle, why does Pittsburgh have to bring Canada into this? Why does Calgary need to be part of it? Why can't it just be Pittsburgh and Houston and maybe Denver?
Well, one thing that most Americans are not aware of is that the number one supplier of energy to the U.S. is not Saudi Arabia or the Middle East or Venezuela. It's Canada. Canada is the number one supplier of energy. As a pollster, I usually don't predict things. The United States will never be energy independent or self-sufficient without Canada. To have a good public policy dialogue, Americans have to realize who our real energy partner is, and the energy partner is Canada. Canada is not a perfect partner. You know, Canada has its own interests, but the reality is, pick the type of partner that you'd probably want on the energy front, and Canada should be at the top of the list. So the reality is that because of the energy relationship that exists, and Canada is the number one energy supplier to the United States, Calgary has to be part of it because it's about continental stability and the continental market. There's actually more energy that flows north-south than east-west, right? There's more energy coming from Quebec in eastern Canada, hydroelectric energy into New York State than east-west in the states. And the same thing goes true in terms of the oil in western Canada going south, not necessarily going to eastern Canada. So, you know, I think it's important for Americans to realize Canada is the number one energy partner for the U.S., building that continental strategy is not only good for America, but it's good for Canada and it's good for everyone.
Is this just a shifting of dollars and a shifting of jobs, or is there a rising tide that Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh can tap into?
Well, you know, we have to think of – we usually think of energy sources as what is the price of gas or what is the price to kind of heat my home in the wintertime. The reality is that we have to think of energy in broader terms. We have to think of energy as a job creator and as an attractor of jobs. You know, the old paradigm is, you know, when you want to be competitive with other countries, you want to cut labor costs, you want to introduce technology, you want to lay off workers. If we think of energy as something that can create a competitive advantage because manufacturing products can be lower because energy inputs are lower, that means that in Pennsylvania, we can still have quality jobs because we're competing, we're taking advantage of that energy resource, but we can attract the capital to compete with the Chinese and to compete with the Europeans. So, you know, I think what's missing from the dialogue right now is politicians not just thinking about getting out of the ground and feeding it into the supply chain, thinking about how do we directly link good-paying jobs in Pennsylvania and making Pennsylvania part of that continental economy that is going to compete not on fewer jobs, not on cheap jobs, but you know what? On manufacturing that can be very competitive because those energy input costs are very low.
You do a lot of polling and you look at a lot of other research data like that. Are you seeing a continued shift in public opinion on energy issues, or is it static?
No, it's changing all the time. And you know, we can't underestimate the impact of things that happen around the world on the views of people in Pennsylvania. So, for example, when we had in Japan the problem with the nuclear generator and the earthquake there, that has an impact on how people in Pennsylvania think about nuclear energy and about safety and the environment related to different energy sources. So I think we're going through an era of transition that, what I'll say, energy was in the public policy attic, kind of rattling around. No one really looked at it. It was kind of like, yeah, we got to pay through the nose for the energy and the oil that we need. But now I think it's being reframed and has a new role in terms of how does it create jobs and how can my day-to-day life be better? Can I save money? Will it cost me less to go to work? Will the electricity in my home potentially be lower or at least stable? And I expect a lot more ups and downs on the energy front because, like you were saying earlier, you know, the technology is changing. There are different things that will happen related to the environment, and it's going to be part of the growing process on the energy front to kind of manage those problems because, you know what, there will be problems in developing shale gas, not because there's anything special to shale gas. There are problems whenever there's any kind of new resource that's being developed. It's how we react and whether we have standards and kind of a vision on how to move forward that'll make the difference.
Mr. Nanos, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Nick Nanos, chairman of Nanos Research Group.
Coming up, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette film critic Barry Paris looks at summer movies. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.